on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll speak to you next week.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Hello, this is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, January 9th, 2026. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble.ca shares with you the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back to Rabble Radio. In our first episode of the new year, we're sharing a segment from our most recent Off the Hill political panel. This month, the theme was Off the Hill, analyzing the NDP leadership race. With only 3 months to go until a new leader of the NDP is named, our panel, featuring Libby Davies, Judy Rebick, James Adair, and Carl Nirenberg, broke down the major issues, endorsements, and events of the race so far and predicted where it might go from here. Here is a small clip from this week's panel. Take a listen.
In the recent federal election, the NDP experienced a notable drop in support, going down to just 7 seats and therefore losing official party status in the House of Commons. Tonight on our panel, we will focus on where the NDP might go from here, which candidate would be best positioned to rebuild the party, and why they're the most suitable person for the job.
And so with all that context, let's start with a question for everyone. What do you think is the biggest challenge facing the New Democratic Party as a whole in this current moment? Libby, I'll ask you to start for this question.
Okay, thanks very much, Gabby. And hello to everybody on the panel and everybody who's tuned in. It's good to be back on Off the Hill. So that's a good question to start us off. I feel that, you know, it's going to be very important to have a leader for the NDP who's going to really grow the party. And the challenge that we face, I think, is to show that we are a strong and relevant force in Canadian politics. And I have to say that I think Don Davies, who's been the interim leader, has done a really great job. I mean, he stepped up after the federal election. He's been out there. Considering that there's only 7 members of the caucus and they don't have party status, he has actually done a very good job of keeping the NDP perspective in the news and speaking out. I noticed his very recent statement on Venezuela. It was a very strong statement. But I think that's our overall challenge. And, you know, I am a new Democrat, is to show Canadians that this party, is a very important element of Canadian politics, and that we can be a political party that offers an alternative to neoliberal capitalist policies in this country, both in Canada and globally, and that we actually have the capacity to form government. To me, that is not just a pie in the sky. I consider myself sort of a pragmatic socialist, and I believe that we should always be striving as a political party, as part of a political movement. And Judy and I go way back on this, even to the old New Politics Initiative days, like 20 years ago, I guess it was, for the idea that a political party can be more than just an electoral machine. It can be part of a movement for transformative change. And I think the NDP has really slipped from that in recent years. Maybe we were never there. And this is an opportunity in this leadership race to examine those questions and say, are we up for this? Do we have the courage, the foresight, the boldness, the vision to put forward with Canadians and to invite Canadians who are progressive to join a political party that is very bold and outspoken and is going to change the way politics is done in this country and change the way Canada is seen in the world. So that's a pretty big challenge, but hey, why not go for it?
Now, Judy, what are your thoughts on this question? What's the biggest challenge facing the NDP as a whole?
Well, I think the NDP requires a whole renovation, if you want. I don't know what the right word is, revitalization. Like, you know, the NDP, by trying to be a little better than the Liberals for the last 20 years, has just slit its own throat. And right now it needs to be revived. That's what I think needs to happen. And I mean, I agree with Libby. Ideally, it would be better if there was an NDP government, but I don't think that's going to happen. But what I do think has to happen is a revival of the left in general, and that it's desperate. Like, it's not just a regular, well, you know, we need to revive the party. Like, as Libby pointed out, she and I were involved in the New Politics Initiative 20 years ago, which was an attempt to recreate the NDP at that time to be closer to the social movements, which were rising in the anti-globalization movement. And we didn't succeed, although we really did well, I think, and we had a great run at it. But now we have a couple of candidates, but in particular Avi Lewis, who's talking about doing that now with the party, and hopefully, as well as other things, and hopefully it will revive the party. And that's just part of what we have to do. We need to bring together social movements. We need to do lots of things, but reviving the NDP is part of what we have to do. And I definitely think that we're suffering terribly by not having the NDP have official party status. And I agree that Don Davies is doing a good job, but it's just not the same if you don't have party status. You don't have the same power in Parliament, and you can't really, they're not really being able to affect anything now. And I think we'll see what going to an almost two-party system is doing, is that the Liberals are going, I mean, this guy's further right than Paul Martin, and that takes some doing. When I'm talking about this guy, I mean our current Prime Minister, Carney. So I think a whole revitalization of the party is what's needed.
And let's go to our parliamentary reporter, Carl Ehrenberg. Carl.
So first, I'll list what a lot of people think are the biggest challenge, and then I'll tell you what I think is the biggest challenge. And I tend to agree with both Libby and Judy have said. But a lot of people talk about reconnecting with the traditional working class, with the blue-collar working class that they somehow lost, and with the male voters. They talk about connecting Canadians with Indigenous rights issues and with identity issues in a way that Canadians will relate to it, but that will make the NDP champion of issues of those sort of issues. They also talk about somehow getting back into the game in Quebec. The NDP not only won 59 seats in one election, but they kept a bunch of seats in Quebec in the next election, so they have the capacity for roots there. So those are all stuff that people talk about, as well as taking lessons from the provincial parties and becoming more like the successful provincial parties. But what I see, especially as a person who's a journalist, I'm still a journalist. I have my views, and I don't pretend to be not situated somewhere on the landscape here. But what I see is that the NDP has to connect to the moment that Canadians are suffering from. Just now, we had the American invasion of Venezuela, the kidnapping of their leader, and then the next day, president started saying, "Okay, now we're going to just grab Greenland." I guess they accused the Venezuelan president of being a drug dealer. I think they're going to accuse the Danish prime minister of being a dealer in mid-century modern furniture and canned ham or something. So. So it's just, they talk about Greenland and all kinds of people, respectable, calm, normal, middle of the road people like Bob Ray and Janice Stein and Roland Paris say, this is scary for Canada. All kinds of people say that. But the NDP has to have a position on this. It has to have a policy position that responds to the challenge of the moment specifically and in a more general way. And I think that policy position involves invigorating the public sector, invigorating the youth of the public sector in Canada in a way that we haven't imagined in a long time. I'll leave it there for now.
Thank you so much, Carl. And last, James, we'd like to hear from you on what the biggest challenge to the NDP right now is.
Yeah, I mean, first, I'd like to say thank you so much for having me on the panel today. I'm in really esteemed company, so I apologize if I have a little bit of nerves. I think the challenge the NDP is facing and the challenge that the left in Canada is facing right now is relevance. I think the NDP and we need to be critical of ourselves. I had with the UAW NDP, we had a meeting with Don Davies, who I also think is doing excellent. And he told us that the NDP and the left really need to look inward and figure out what's gone wrong and what is going wrong, because we're losing and we can't afford to be losing. I can't. People my age, generations after us, everyone can't afford to live in a world where we lose. It's a horrifying prospect. And I think the issue is that we have not positioned ourselves as the left or as the NDP to be in a place where we are relevant to the moment. I think we like to attach ourselves to the moment. We like to chase the moment, but we are not, we haven't been for a while relevant to the moment and leading the moment. And I think that's really what we need to figure out as a party and as a political movement in this country, is what do we need to do to be relevant to people? Because if we aren't, capturing young new people, if we aren't winning the mass political opinion, then we're looking at, climate catastrophe. I think we're looking at a rise of far right authoritarianism and fascism. And we're looking at the deprivation and degradation of billions of people's lives. It's existential. And not to be flippant, but there's a quote from a TV show called Shoresy that I don't know if anyone here watches, but the quote is, it's not enough to want to win. You have to hate to lose. And I think that the left hasn't hated to lose. I think part of us enjoys losing because it makes us feel like, okay, we lost, but at least we're morally, at least we're right. At least 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the line, we can point and say, we told you so. And that's not enough. We can't afford to do that. I'm not willing to afford to do that. And so I think that's the kind of attitude that we have to install in ourselves, is that, it's nice to win, but we have to hate to lose, because losing is, I think, existential for Canada, but also globally. And I think that means we have to be relevant. And I don't think we've been relevant for a long time.
All right. Thank you, James. And for this next question, I'm going to go directly to Libby. Now, Libby, you have a long history with the NDP. You've been involved in the NDP leadership, serving as deputy leader of the party. What qualities do you believe the NDP's next leader must have in order to be effective?
Oh, thanks, Nick. First of all, I should disclose that I'm publicly supporting Avi Lewis, but I'll try not to be partisan here and just talk more generally. And I'd really like to pick up on Carl's comment about the challenge of the NDP in this global situation and needing to speak out, because I think that's actually a very key point that the new leader, whoever he or she may be, has got to address. As my good friend Sven Robinson would say, the NDP cannot anymore sort of slide to the mushy middle, which we have done on foreign affairs very often over the last decade or so. Certainly on Palestine, Heather McPherson has done a great job. Avi's done a great job. Other MPs have done a great job. But generally on foreign policy and on these huge international questions, We've almost adopted sort of a me too, whatever Canada does, kind of go along with it, say a little bit more. And I think that's been a huge loss for the NDP. Some people may remember, we used to have a very powerful foreign affairs committee of the party, not the caucus. And they used to analyze issues. They used to speak out, bring forward resolutions. We've lost all of that. And so I do think that the new leader, I mean, there's many qualities that they need to have. They need to be bold. They need to be willing to try new things. I would like to see a new Democratic Party that adopts an organizing model for itself. So we're not just an electoral machine. We don't just go to people before an election and say, oh, can you sign up? Can you door knock? And can you give us money? We have to organize in between elections. We have to be involved in issues. We have to be involved in debate and involving people, so it's more participatory. We have to reach out to activists and go where they are and not expect them to come to us. So all of those kinds of ideas, I think, are required of a new leader. The status quo is just not good enough anymore in the NDP. And I think there are some candidates that represent more of that view, and there are other candidates that represent a different kind of view. So to get back to Judy's point about sort of a revival or a reinvention of the NDP, these are all qualities that a leader must have. And to me, it's about growing the party and growing the movement. Someone who's got a much bigger picture idea about what needs to happen. And you know what? Is willing to take some risks. Like at this point, what do we have to lose? Right? I mean, I think when you look at politics out there, even in the US, you look at what happened in New York City, in other places, like people are ready to embrace a much bolder, more radical kind of politics. And I think the NDP has moved away from that. So I want to see a leader that takes us there, that is willing to take some risk, to bring people in and to say, we're all part of this. And it's about very big changes that we need to make, not only in Canada, but on the global, on the international stage as well.
Yeah, thank you so much, Libby. As you mentioned at the top, you're publicly supporting Avi Lewis. I know you are not alone among NDP supporters who are embracing that candidacy. Judy, I know you are also very supportive of Avi Lewis. So I wanted to throw this question to you. Why do you think Lewis is the person for the job? And how concerned should the party be that Avi has already run to be an NDP member of parliament and lost twice? Why should voters overlook that record in the leadership race?
Okay, so first of all, I would get that out of the way. You know, like I like Avi said, Jack Layton lost twice too. Like Jack Layton was not successful electorally until he became leader of the NDP. And John Mulcair was very successful electorally. You know what I mean? So like what you do before you're elected is not relevant. And also Avi ran the first time in a riding he couldn't possibly win. It was where he lived. And the second time against Teddy Fry, who's practically a statue in that riding. Nothing could move her out of there. You know, I had a fight with Teddy Fry when I was president of NAC in 1990, and she was the member of parliament in that riding, okay? So let's put that aside. It's not relevant. In terms of why I think Avi would be good is because I think Avi does have these ideas of revitalizing the party, of seeing the Social Democratic Party as only building a Social Democratic Party is only one thing that we on the left have to do, that he understands the need to be pressured when you're, you know, one of the things that I learned over the years is what happens when you get into politics, and Libby could talk about this better than I can, is there's a pressure on you, you know, and that pressure always seems to go to, well, you know, we can't take risks. And if we say this, we're going to alienate these people and so on and all that kind of shit that goes on with politicians. And they start thinking these little compromises is what are going to work instead of bold action. And this has happened to almost Libby exception, Sven an exception, almost everyone else I've ever known in politics. I think Avi's got a good support group that'll make it very hard for that to happen to him. I think that's important. And I think that, and I think he's surrounded by some really good people. And I think he's got the charisma. And, you know, let me talk about that. That's what Jack had. He had charisma. You know, people liked him. And that was one of the reasons he was able to win. And also, Avi does speak French, not very well, but it's getting better. And I think I agree with Carl that that's important. But the last thing I think I want to say is that, you know, I don't look to the States very often for an example, but I think Madami is really giving us an example of the kind of campaign you need, that people want to be active. They want to be organized. They want to be in community. They want to work together to change the world. And, you know, the NDP turned itself into this, you know, phone call machine that just called people and asked them how they wanted to vote, you know, and hired people to call people instead of organizing, right? The only thing that I ever enjoyed in electoral politics was going door to door. And actually, you know, when you talk to people, the people are really pretty sensible if they knew what we thought, right? But we don't do that anymore. And if you do talk, you're just asking them how they vote. And so I think Avi understands all that, and not just Avi as an individual, but the people around him. And so I think that's why we need him as a party. And it looks like Eve Engler's people are trying to take over the chat, which is annoying me no end. So, like, cool it, guys, okay? Like, you just convince us that it's good that he's not on the platform by trying to take over the chat. Sorry. Well,
I think we may get to a question on Eve a little bit later in the show. But for now, I'm going to go to Carl for the next question. Carl, you've written about the need for the next NDP leader to be bilingual in both English and in French. How are you currently feeling about this in a field of candidates who are mostly not bilingual?
Well, you know, it saddens me and it worries me. And I'm not quite sure why so many of the many, many bilingual people who are involved with the NDP, you know, I think of great political figures like Peter Julian, who just lost a seat in BC and was a member there for many, many years, who speaks excellent and fluent and comfortable French, or Sven Robinson. Yeah, it's just, it's a sign, I guess, of the fact that it's a difficult time for the NDP, and a lot of people are kind of ducking the leadership race in this difficult time, thinking the challenge is too big. But it's, you know, I mean, the only point I would make is that the Liberals and Conservatives decided, I mean, the Liberals, I'll make a confession here. I am 78 years old, so I'm not young. The last time the Liberals had a unilingual leader, I was 20. I was 20 years old, and they gave up. It was impossible after that for them to have a leader who didn't speak both languages very comfortably and very well. The Conservatives waited 7 or 8 years, and their first bilingual leader was Joe Clark, who spoke very good French, never lived in Quebec, came from Alberta. You know, when Stephen Harper became leader of the Conservatives, he had come from a movement that had nobody. It was very anti-Quebec. They didn't have run seats in Quebec. And then they chose him in the United Party because he could speak French. And he managed to surround himself. People whose politics I find very distressing, people like James Moore and Jason Kenney and Chris Alexander, a bunch of Anglophone cabinet ministers, not from Quebec, not people who had grown up speaking French in the neighborhood.
That was a small clip from Rabble's most recent Off the Hill political panel. To watch the full recording, please visit Rabble TV or visit Rabble's YouTube channel. And now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. Here to bring us up to date is Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. Starting this week in national news, Bianca Mugiani announced her intention to run for the leadership of the NDP. Mugiani is a longtime activist and peace advocate who is running on an anti-capitalist and anti-militarist platform. She is the wife of Eve Engler, whose candidacy for the NDP leadership was rejected by the three-person leadership committee late last year. The deadline for candidates to submit their paperwork and the $100,000 entry fee to the NDP Leadership Committee is fast approaching at the end of this month. Despite the committee's rejection of her husband's candidacy, Mugiani hopes that her candidate application is accepted. She also hopes that the committee will reverse its decision banning Engler from the race, and that if he is allowed to run, she has said she will drop out. In labor news, the Canadian Union of Postal Workers has reached a tentative agreement with Canada Post. Union members have been working without a collective agreement since December of 2023. This comes after the union rejected a so-called final offer from Canada Post that was made to them in July of last year. That offer would see wages rise by 13% over 4 years, but also gave Canada Post the power to close any post office across the country and change the responsibilities of some employees. That offer was rejected by the union. The tentative deal that is currently being considered would see wages rise by 6.5% next year, 3% the year after that, and then a guaranteed cost of living adjustment for the following years. The deal also guarantees that Canada Post won't close nearly 400 post offices nationwide. Staying in labor news, labor unions across Canada expressed solidarity this week with the people of Venezuela. Last week, U.S. President Donald Trump ordered the U.S. military to bomb Venezuela and capture its president, Nicolas Maduro. 80 Venezuelans lost their lives in the U.S. attack. Unions like the Canadian Labour Congress, Unifor, and the Ontario branch of the Canadian Union of Public Employees all condemned the U.S.'s violation of Venezuelan sovereignty and called for Canada to support the will of the Venezuelan people. A statement from Unifor reads, quote, "Trump's escalated threats and actions are designed to undermine the ability of nations that share the Western Hemisphere to control their own economies, protect their jobs and industries, and make decisions in the interests of their people rather than under the threat of retaliation from the United States." Also this week, Trump's invasion of Venezuela has given the U.S. effective control over the country's vast oil reserves. This raises concerns that Alberta's economy could suffer in the near future. The U.S. is the main importer of oil from Alberta. Most of that oil is shipped to refineries in Texas. Venezuela produces the same type of heavy, dirty, crude oil as Alberta, but is significantly closer to Texas refineries. With the U.S. now in control of Venezuelan oil, demand for Alberta oil could drop, leading to a downturn in Alberta's economy. And finally, in environmental news, in an article on Rabble, David Suzuki discusses a recent swarm of anchovies that visited Semiahmoo Bay off the coast of BC. He explains how the abundance of these fish led to a wide range of other species to also visit the area, including flocks of gulls and packs of seals. To Suzuki, this is a demonstration of biodiversity in action, which was awe-inspiring. He explains that unless more is done to protect the environment and to protect biodiversity, events like these will become rare. By reducing our dependence on fossil fuels and recycling plastics, we can not only protect our oceans, but the biodiversity that it supports. And as always, you can read about the full version of all the stories we talked about today on rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.